So, most people know that two-thirds of this podcast is based in the state of Michigan. Alex, Michigan transplant into Pennsylvania. He's a Steelers fan, whatever, he's lame. But for the past decade, Detroit sports has been an absolute disaster. All four major teams have been terrible, and they had the worst winning percentage over cities with four major sports teams in the past 10 years. It starts with the Lions picking it up. Lions go from the literal perennial loser definition to now, which is crazy to say, Super Bowl contenders. And immediately after, the Red Wings just missed the playoffs in an incredible final 2 weeks last season. The Tigers just went on a stretch that we have not seen in Major League Baseball before, since pitchers were allowed to throw over 82 miles an hour. And the Pistons are the Pistons, but that you go from being absolutely unwatchable to being at the top of your game almost like overnight. And it got me thinking, while Detroit was the worst sports city over the past 10 years, what is the worst sports city of all time? And I think that's a tough, I have an answer, and I'll give you a second to think about it, because like I'm just trying to think, okay, championships, maybe you can even throw in college as well, because if you do that, then you can look at Michigan with the national championship and kind of takes the state and the rest of the world, you know, by storm. I have an answer, and I think is it's Minneapolis, because the Twins won a World Series in like the mid 90s. I think it was 95 or something like that. But you have the Vikings, who did what the Bills did before the Bills did it. I think they've been to four Super Bowls, they've lost them all. Okay. The Minnesota Wild, the Minnesota North Stars, they lost the North Stars to Texas, then they get the Minnesota Wild. They have been the definition of mid since their existence started. And then the Timberwolves, they were good, but they've never won a championship either. And then you can even dip into the colleges. Golden Gophers, fine, good hockey program, but only, you know, a third of the country cares about hockey. What is the worst sports city?
Minneapolis is a great nominee. I think this could be recency bias, and it probably is. But if you think about what's happened to them recently, Oakland has just been done so
Oh,
dirty.
that's just tragic.
Absolutely tragic what has happened to that city. Now, you probably can't legit put them in this conversation because the Warriors were so great and they were still in Oakland for a lot of that run. And then the Raiders were obviously great back in, I don't know if it was the 70s or 80s. I think it was the
The
70s.
Raiders won one championship as the Oakland Raiders. Then they won two as the Los Angeles Raiders.
Okay, see, so even as Oakland, only one of those championships was when they were in Oakland. So I think Oakland could be one of the more tortured ones that their team just keep getting ripped from them, and then the A's for forever have been the cheapest team in baseball, and now their owner screwed them over and is going to move the team to Vegas. And Oakland will now, after the A's move, they will not have a professional sports franchise anymore.
Which is so sad, because I don't know if you watched any of the stuff from this past week of baseball. Like the Oakland fan, like Oakland has fans. It's just that they were so fed up with ownership. And as a Tigers fan for the past however many years, they went from spending so much money to spending no money. You know, I'm not going to say like, oh, I understand their pain, because John Fisher's payroll for that entire Oakland Athletics team is $68 million. Shohei Ohtani's contract, so literally just down the road in California, he gets $70 million a year. One player on the Dodgers makes more than the entire 26-man roster on the Oakland A's this year.
That's wild. I was actually listening to Pardon My Take the other day. Free shout out. Love that podcast. But Pardon My Take was interviewing someone who was very well connected or is very well connected with the NFL. And this guy was talking about how, like, there are NFL owners who are literally just there to cash the check, make their team as profitable as possible, and then like sell the team off at a later date. And it was funny because the, you know, Big Cat and PFT and the other guys on the show, they're all like, I can't imagine owning an NFL team and not doing everything in my power to help that team win a Super Bowl. Like, and I'm sure you're the same way. Like, I can't imagine being the owner of a team and being like, I'm cashing paychecks every week. Like, this team's making bank. Like, the value's going up. I'm going to sell them for X amount. But just be in the toilet every year and have fans hate you and make them miserable. And they pay all these hundreds of dollars for a day to go to the game and watch their favorite team and they suck. I would not be able to live with myself if I owned a team that was trash and not actually trying to win a Super Bowl. But there are owners like that, and you never, ever know.
It's exactly right, because it is run like a business. We're fans, so obviously we're like, make the team good because we want something to root for. But owners are more concerned. I shouldn't say the majority of owners, but there is a vocal minority of owners that are more concerned with their their margin as opposed to their actual like top dollar, like gross income. It's like, yeah, you could make more money per se by having a good team, going to the, you know, the championship, all these postseason tickets, but your margin could be greater if you have a crappy team and you still sell tickets and go through all the stuff, like, you know, have these retirement ceremonies, these gimmicks throughout the year. And it's like, oh, I only put in, you know, $30 million and I actually made 120, as opposed to me putting in 120 and making, you know, 28 million over the season. They're like, I'm not going to do that. No way.
And if you have that attitude, you just don't deserve to own a team in any sport. I'm sorry. You don't deserve to work in the world of sports if you have that attitude. Just bottom line. But we have college football to get to, because it was a wild freaking
weekend.
This
isn't an economics podcast. This is a Big Ten football podcast. What are we doing?
If you want an econ podcast, Corey does that on the side. He can plug that later in the show. But if you love Big Ten football, you came to the right place. Welcome to Big Banter, everybody. Make sure you subscribe wherever you're listening, on Apple or Spotify. Follow us on Twitter at B1G Banter Pod, and then Instagram at B1G Banter. Corey, say something nice to the people who are listening.
Folks, it's good to be back. I know I've been off for a couple weeks, and I've missed you. Truly, I have. I'm so glad that we get to say sweet nothings into the interwet sound waves, and you get to hear them. So thank you so much for listening for what we have to say, and hopefully we bring a little bit of enjoyment and brightness to your day.
So let's get into it. Absolutely loaded show. We've got fan questions. We've got week 5 review with a ranked matchup in the Big Ten this year, which was wild, the whiteout at Penn State. We've got the controversial ending of Michigan-Minnesota, and Rutgers, they're not ranked, and they should be, and we all know it. But let's get to the fan questions first, because one of them has to do with Rutgers. Let's start out with this question from, let me hit up the account. I want to get the name right. Well, the username, SRP5139. I will get his name here in a second. But he says, who is winning the Big Ten this season?
Rutgers. End of question.
Corey, don't do this. No, don't get your hopes up and don't get their hopes up.
No, they're not going to win it. Man, I don't know. It's probably going to be Ohio State, as terrible as that says. I mean, some of us, you know, thought that Oregon could give them a run for their money. I thought that Oregon could give them a run for their money, but I mean, they're doing exactly what Michigan did last year, and they have a weak non-conference schedule. Maybe there was some things that you didn't like about how they played, but their first game in the Big Ten, they left without a doubt that they were the better team, and that's what they're just going to keep doing. I will say they probably have a tougher road because they have to go to Oregon and then to Penn State, and I think those are all in the span of 3 games, and if they can go away unscathed, I mean, they probably win in the thing.
Yep. I put in a future on Oregon before the season, and I don't feel good about it. Ohio State looks like just an unstoppable force right now, and I don't know that there's an immovable object in their way in the Big Ten right now. Oregon is rounding into form. They are definitely playing much better now than they were at the beginning of the season. USC looks better than I think people thought they would, but they even played with their food a little bit with Wisconsin. Then you have Penn State, who, I mean, Penn State typically looks this good early in the year and they get people's hopes up and then you're not sure what they turn into. They are not without fault, but I think, yeah, if I had to put my money on it right now, it's Ohio State, and I think you'd be hard-pressed to find anyone who feels differently right now when it comes to the Big Ten picture. And that was Steve, by the way. Thank you, Steve, for the question from Instagram. And if you're not following on Instagram, make sure you do, because we'll post stories like this every once in a while before we record. You submit questions to us, and then we always get them on the podcast. Second question is from Rutgers Rush, probably the best Rutgers fan account on Instagram. I love following them. They said, do you think Rutgers has a possible path to the Big Ten championship game? Before we answer.
Of course they do. Of course they do. Oh, sorry. Before we answer.
retract your statement. Before we answer, running through Rutgers' schedule. So they are 4-0 right now. They are going on the road to Nebraska.
When?
This week.
When?
Oh, I thought you said when.
No. When?
Okay. At Nebraska, win for you. Wisconsin.
Win.
UCLA.
Win.
At USC.
Win.
Minnesota.
Win.
At Maryland.
Win.
Illinois.
Win.
At Michigan State.
Win. They're not losing another. They're not losing a game. They're going undefeated.
That would be absolute chaos if Rutgers went undefeated.
I don't think they've ever been undefeated.
Have they been defeated? Have they ever done the opposite?
Absolutely, they have to have. I mean, I love Rutgers as much as the next guy. It's funny how on this podcast my love has shifted from Purdue to Rutgers, and it makes zero sense because Shiano was saying the stuff about Michigan last year, like something's not right, and it's like I don't think any Michigan fan should like Rutgers and whatever. And he's a Ohio State guy too, but like. Rutgers football gets you something about football in New Jersey. Just gets your loins going.
They had that night game this last week,
dude,
with Washington.
That was hype.
That environment looked kind of electric, dude.
That was hype. Okay, but in all honesty, is there a path for them to get there? Yeah, they're going to lose one of those games. It's probably going to be to USC or Nebraska. The path for them.
I mean, don't discount Illinois either. Illinois travels to Rutgers, but I think those are the three toughest games. They go to Nebraska, they go to USC, and then they host Illinois.
You have to win one of those games on the road for a path to exist.
And you have to beat Illinois at home. You probably got to have one loss, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Go undefeated at home, lose one game on the road, and then there's a path. The path for you is there. And then you can get polywopped by Ohio State.
So you're rooting for Rutgers. Rutgers has to have one loss or less.
Yes.
And then you need Ohio State to beat Oregon. You need Oregon to slip up one other place. And then, man, Penn State doesn't have a tough schedule either, but you would need Penn State to have
two losses. That's the really interesting thing. There could be – well, and then it's what's the tiebreaker scenario? I don't think we've gotten into that. We will get there closer to the end of the year because it'll make more sense. But there is a very realistic possibility that Ohio State, Oregon, Penn State, Rutgers, and, I mean, honestly, probably USC all finish with one Big Ten loss. Who goes in these scenarios? And I guess we'll find that out once we get closer.
Yeah, now that the conference is so big and the middle part of the conference is much better than we thought they would be, there might be some unexpected competition when we're like 4 weeks out from the end of the season. The scenarios could get kind of wild.
Yeah, heck, I mean, with the way that Indiana and Illinois have been playing, I mean,
seriously,
I don't know.
Genuinely, you don't, because who expected those two teams to be good? Not us.
Definitely not me. I was hammering the under for Illinois, and we'll talk about them in a minute. But
well, let's actually talk about them first. So let's get into the games from last week. Again, thank you, Rutgers Rush and Steve, for the fan questions.
Go Rutgers.
Week 5, Penn State opened up the week for big. Oh no, they didn't open up the week. Rutgers was first.
Yeah,
but we're going to talk about Penn State Illinois first. They had their whiteout. Invited Illinois in at night, and this was a really good game. Penn State 21, Illinois 7. I actually, from the Big Banter account, very prematurely tweeted that Penn State Illinois was the most entertaining game of Saturday night. And I tweeted that when Alabama Georgia was like a rout. Mm. And then about 25 minutes later, I quoted our tweet and said, never mind, I've been convinced otherwise.
That game was on drugs.
That game was, dude, that was insane. I was playing CFB 25 and had it on my phone. In retrospect, I wish I had the screens switched, but I was like, I just kept looking over my phone like, what is happening?
Yeah, the fourth quarter of that game was probably one of the best fourth quarters I've ever seen. But this is a Big Ten podcast. No SEC propaganda here.
No. Illinois and Rutgers would crush Georgia and Alabama.
Yeah, no SEC propaganda. <can't>.
Anyways, so Penn State wins by 14. I feel like the story of this game is fairly simple, and it's that Penn State could run the ball and Illinois could not. Illinois could not run the ball whatsoever. As a team, they averaged 1.1 yards per carry. God awful. But Luke Altmyer, like, props to him, man. He played his balls off in this game and kept Illinois in this for a long time, along with Illinois' defense, which is just your perfect textbook break or bend but don't break defense. That's their game plan every week. And it almost worked, but Penn State just being able to run the ball ended up being too much.
Yeah, I mean, we could talk about Penn State, and most of this dialogue would go to Penn State. But, I mean, shout out Illinois. I thought they were a dead program. I thought Bielema was on his way out, and I thought he was going to get canned pretty quickly. But I guess there is something about experience. You know, when we were saying nice things about Illinois, which was like 2 years ago, we were saying that Bielema was – the only other active coach in the Big Ten to have a Big Ten championship. And then that kind of quickly faded away after they kind of fell off the cliff for a little bit. But I'm very impressed with the way that Bielema has rallied the troops, because they look like a completely different team than they were from 2 years ago. Even Altmyer looks like a completely different player than he did from last year. I mean, they looked like the most vanilla and bad offense possible. I mean, they did not run the ball well in this game at all. You already said the stats, but Altmyer's been hooping, my brother. Like, he was in the shootout with Nebraska, and he was the reason
going into this game. He was 10th in the country in touchdown passes,
which is nuts. Luke Altmyer
at Illinois.
I know,
at Illinois on a Brett Bielema coached team. Like, their offense, it's fun to watch, dude. Like I said it on last week's episode, tons of pre-snap motion. Like, they don't just like line up under center and hand off like every other play and, you know, two runs and a pass on third down when they don't get it. Like, they get people the ball in really creative ways. Altmyer is sneaky mobile. Like, he was great when he had to be at escaping the pocket in this game, which he had to be a lot. I'm pretty sure Penn State had like 5 sacks or something. It was insane. So couldn't escape it the entire time, but he genuinely was the only reason this game was close. Him and the defense were the only reason this game was close for a long time. And I guess I should mention a third reason this game was close. Whoever the offensive play caller is for Penn State, I don't know if James Franklin has any input in the play calling, but Kotelnicki, the new offensive coordinator, he has been highly praised at Penn State for like getting them like explosive plays on offense for the first time in a couple of years, and like unlocking, shouldn't say unlocking, but getting more out of Drew Aller and this run game being elite. This game, from an offensive play calling perspective for Penn State, situationally, it was garbage. There were so many just brain dead plays where you're watching this. Penn State ran the ball at will in this game. If you watch this, it was like they got to be averaging like double digit yards a carry. They were averaging 5.4. You go into the box score, Katron Allen was averaging 5.7. Singleton was averaging 5.9. And yet they would get in these third and shorts in Illinois territory and then be like, you know what? Let's be the smartest guys in the room on Let's Throw a Pass, right? Or critical third down. Let's take Drew Aller out of the game, put in our tight end to play quarterback and run like a sneaky, like power speed option, whatever you want to call it, and go for the first down. Why are you taking your best player, your star quarterback off the field in critical downs? Why are you not leaning on the best part of your game in key downs and a key advantage that you have over a specific team? I watched this game, and yeah, Penn State won, and they beat a really good Illinois team. But I come away thinking the same thing that we've said for the past couple of years. I don't trust James Franklin and decision-making in big games. And this has been consistent for a couple of years now. And it's a real bummer to think that it's going to last through this season too.
You know, just with the smartest guys in the room comment, I guess I don't really know what I'm trying to say here, but like there is a coaching chess match that we as fans don't get to see simply watching the game on TV or even being there in person. And I feel like there's a lot of dialogue with the upper echelon teams in most conferences, so like in Alabama, Georgia, or whatever, and specifically over the past 3 years in the Big Ten, Ohio State and Michigan, of just like, okay, like not do like doing things either like to not open up the playbook or doing things that you wouldn't normally do to save face or whatever. Like, is there a level of James Franklin and his staff being like, we know this game is at hand, so let's just try to work on some things and see if they work? I mean, that seems like a pretty bold assessment because Illinois is much better than we thought they were going to be, and they hung around in the whiteout game. Like, what?
I was going to say, I would agree with that statement 100% if this wasn't a one-possession game a majority of the time. Like, and you look at the box score, right? You look at the stats, you think, okay, Penn State sacked Altmaier 7 times. They held Illinois to under 2 yards a carry. Illinois was 4-for-13 on third down when Penn State was 6-for-11. And Illinois turned the ball over twice and Penn State didn't turn it over at all. If I had given you only those stats before the game, you would have thought Penn State blew the doors off of Illinois at home in the whiteout. And it was just an electric environment, and they were whipping the ball all over the place. Nick Singleton was ripping 40, 50-yard runs. But no, they won by 2 possessions, and this was a game late. And I fault nobody but James Franklin and Kotelnicki. I hate the way they called this game on critical downs. and I think I come away from this game, you know, I feel the same way about Penn State after this game as I do before. And you just beat a ranked Illinois team who's really good. But I feel the same way about your team now as I did before. And I actually might feel a little bit better about Illinois than I did before the game. Like, they went on the road to Nebraska, a really good, talented Nebraska team, beat them at night, then went to Happy Valley at night in the whiteout, had this a game late. Like, I feel really good about Illinois. And Penn State, I feel like, I just feel like you're the same Penn State.
I think time will tell, unfortunately, and it's in the Big Ten. The season for the entire conference has come down to one or two games, and that's what it's going to be. It's going to be Oregon, Ohio State. It's going to be Penn State, Ohio State. So we think.
You're right. Time will tell. Time will tell. So let's get to the team that opened up the weekend for the Big Ten. Corey, would you like to do the honors? Rutgers football invites the Washington Huskies in for a night game. That was not good. That's not good. Depending on how they play against Michigan, that may be a permanent name. But Rutgers takes down Washington 21-18 at home. Would you pull yourself together?
It's funny.
It was not that bad.
Washington Huskies.
You're so stupid.
You're stupid. You said it.
I did say it. But Rutgers beats Washington at home by 3. I felt probably differently about this game than you did. How do you feel about Rutgers after seeing this game and them beating Washington?
They took care of business. I mean, like, there's games for you to play to get over the hump. And how many times has Rutgers tried to make an environment that's like hostile, right? The all black, or, you know, selling out the stadium and like, oh yeah, we're a legitimate program. And then it just like explodes in their face, you know? Obviously, like, I think of this through the Michigan lens, where they did get one of those wins, but Michigan was terrible. And then Michigan goes in there and beats them by 70. And I feel like there was a couple times last year where you're kind of like ready for Rutgers to turn the corner. And I don't really think we know what Washington is, but now we know what Rutgers is as well. And they have an identity. They are going to run the ball. And they played really, really well. It did come down to a last second field goal attempt. But I mean, a complete game, I would say, and a Rutgers statement identity win on a Friday night in a game that you needed to have in order to potentially make some noise in this Big Ten season. So that's kind of how I feel about it, but I'm also a little bit of a slappy for this team. So, you know, you'll probably get a little bit more in depth. I don't think Ethan, Cal McManus has been the answer at quarterback.
I agree
that they've wanted, but anything was better than the options that they had last year. So improvement, but slightly question mark.
Yeah, I think that's I thought we were going to feel differently. I think we feel pretty much the same about this game. I think Rutgers is a team that doesn't shoot themselves in the foot, and they can kind of wait it out and wait it out and wait it out and force you to make a mistake, or maybe even not force you to make a mistake. They might just be playing teams that naturally do this to themselves. Because we talked about this when they played, was it Virginia Tech last week? Yeah, they played Virginia Tech, right? Yeah, they played Virginia Tech, and Virginia Tech, like, you know, missed a field goal or two.
They won on the road too, tough place to play.
And it's on the road, tough place to play, right? So you want to give Rutgers a lot of credit. But then you kind of look at the details and you're like, wow, Virginia Tech kind of beat themselves. You look at the details of this game. Washington outgained Rutgers 521 to 299 just in total yardage. That is a heck of a gap. But they missed three field goals. They had six penalties. And then they went 2 for 12 on third down. So, but it's not to discredit Rutgers. Like, a football team that doesn't beat themselves is going to be in a lot of games. And they're going to win a lot of games. You just want to think about that when you're kind of projecting what you think they can be. And we said it before, like, we were answering fan questions. We looked at the schedule. I think the type of team the Rutgers is, I think 11 wins is in the realm of possibility, because the teams that they're going to play are not the elite of the elite in the Big Ten. They're these middling teams that, like, hey, you know what? USC on any given day can shoot themselves in the foot. Right? Like, Indiana, they could be that team for 1 week. So can Nebraska. So I like Rutgers. Like, Schiano has this team playing the exact type of football that they have to play in order to win games. And Washington just wasn't the team to be able to take advantage of it.
I agree. And then looking back at that schedule, and we've already answered the fan question based off of it. The path is there. It's just, are they going to be able to do what they did this week with more talented rosters? Because Washington lost a lot, obviously, coming off of a national championship berth. And being outgained is concerning. So what are you going to do when USC just starts slinging the ball? Are you going to hope that you're tougher than them in the trenches? Are you going to hope that you're going to be able to run the ball successfully against them? And you're going to have to figure out a way to win on the road and maybe do it more than once as well. Can you run the table at home, and can you either steal or squeak out a win on the road to be considered at the top of the conference this year? I think on paper and the way that you watch the games, if they play a team with a little bit more talent, they might be overmatched. But I think they're heading in the right direction, especially if you can get like a quarterback, a better quarterback, like it was last year. Get somebody who has who can throw the forward pass. Okay, you got that, but he's still not that great at throwing the forward pass. So get somebody else who's a little bit better. The only unfortunate thing is you lose Kyle Manungai, who's been a revelation for this team. But you can go a long way with a elite running back. Just ask Boise State.
You can 100%. And
I'm not comparing those two, by the way. What Genty is doing at Boise State is otherworldly.
Oh yeah, he's insane. He's absolutely insane. But to your point about being concerned about Rutgers being outgained, they cannot stop the run, dude. They cannot stop the run to save their life. They are one of the worst run defenses in the country right now. And against Washington, 207 rushing yards, 7.1 a carry. Yikes.
Ooh.
No bueno. So they'll need to patch that up. But hey, for the meantime, we are talking about an undefeated Rutgers team. So they should be pumped about that in and of itself. Let's go to a team that is probably not so pumped about the way they won this weekend. Michigan beats Minnesota in the battle for the Little Brown Jug, 27-24, in what a lot of people are boiling down to a very controversial ending. So this game, we kind of thought it was over because at halftime, it was 21-3. It was 21-3 Michigan at halftime. And then Minnesota storms back in the second half. They score with, I believe it was like a minute and a half left, something around those lines. And then they make it a three-point game. They kick an onside kick. They recover the onside kick. But there is a flag. And Minnesota is called for offsides on the onside kick. Michigan fans, whew, wiping the sweat off the brow. Sigh of relief. We get another shot. And then they show the replay of the onside kick. That was close, and that's being generous. I think if the guy's offsides, he's offsides by like the very first millimeter of the crown of his helmet. It's that close. I think it's so close that it's a call you never, ever make if you're an official. And I think Michigan got bailed out a little bit. They got bailed out because this is, I believe, the second week at least in a row where they've been outcoached in the second half and a team has come back on them. Their execution on special teams was flawed, to say the least. They didn't recover that onside kick that they should have. And then they had a punt coverage go wrong, which is how Minnesota was able to come back in the first place. They had a couple of play calls that were suspect when you would think they'd be trying to run the clock out. Then they threw a couple of passes. Not a good win. And if you stayed on the coverage until Sharon Moore's, not his post-game presser, like his press conference, but his on-the-field one, he did not seem happy at all. Like, normally in a Michigan win, if you're a Michigan fan, you've been watching a long time, normally Sharon, he's kind of taken up the mantle that of what Jim Harbaugh used to do, where he would pass the mic to a player after a big win. Sharon did not do that this time. He was very mellow, not very joyous for winning a trophy game, and mentioned that there's a lot to work on, which as a Michigan fan, thank you for stating the obvious genuinely and not being like, big win, blah, blah, blah. No, he was very downtrodden in that on-field post-game interview, which I appreciated seeing. But I think you could say they got the good side of that call on the offsides, on the onside kick. They escape with a win, but there's still a lot to work on.
I'll split this up with the good and the bad. The good, and I'll try to keep it as homerless as possible. First half was pretty flawless. I think they were all over Minnesota on defense. Offense was clicking, you know, in their minimalistic approach to the pass game. I think you saw Orji take a few strides, and that's being generous as well. They ran the ball well. They kept going with that identity, so that's great to see. And then that like one stretch where it was touchdown pick, touchdown or touchdown fumble pick or whatever in the second, that essentially sealed the game for the entirety of it. So I thought the first half was pretty much flawless. The bad is that it was a different team in the second half completely. And I don't know what the mentality is with them, because now we've seen this 2 weeks in a row. I think last week it was more of like a talent thing. So like USC got to flex their muscle. They showed their talent on the offensive side of the ball and they were able to claw their way back into the game. But Minnesota, based off of the first half performance, had no business being in this game at all. especially when you have a three possession lead at halftime. They scored a touchdown in the third quarter, and then all hell broke loose in the fourth quarter, and they scored like two touchdowns or 10 points in like 3 minutes of gameplay. To me,
not to mention too, before halftime, the reason it was 21-3 and not 21-0 is because Minnesota completed a Hail Mary that Michigan didn't bat down at the goal line, and they were able to get up and kick a quick field goal.
So it bled the perfect, quote unquote, perfect half bled into the first half anyway. To me, this is just like lazy. And that's really frustrating. It's really frustrating because laziness is all about effort. Like, we got all the speeches of we're going to smash, we're going to have the standard, all this stuff. It's like, okay, for one half, that's what we're going to do. Maybe it's depth. I mean, Mason Graham and Kenneth Grant can't be on the field the entire time. Will Johnson's been battling injuries. Jahir Hill has looked much better over the course of the season as he's gotten a little bit of seasoning in him. But those guys can't be on the field all the time. And you don't have, you know, first round draft picks, you know, hanging in the wings behind you this year. So you're going to have to give some effort here. And it's frustrating because effort is something that you can control, but effort is something that can be fixed like that. And the fact that that's not being done is very concerning to me. I think Origi got a lot of crap about the interception to Loveland. Underthrown ball. It wasn't a good pass. And missed Donovan Edwards wide open. Sure. But that was like the only mistake that he made as a passer. And everybody's like, oh, he sucks. He says, well, he's not good. We all know that. Like, that's not a secret. But I mean, he played well, and you got a little bit more dimension to your game, which is probably why you were able to go up three scores in the first half. But I'm glad that Sherrone Moore was pissed at the end of the game. But being pissed means nothing if it doesn't get fixed. So fix it, because you got a road game, and you just went from a 1-point favorite to a 3-point dog in 30 seconds.
I'll get to your effort point in a second, but to your point about Orgy, I think he's giving us the best of what he can right now, genuinely. Like, I didn't watch that game and think Alex Orgy was a reason we lost. Do I think he's a great quarterback? No. But for what he is, I thought he did very well in the game. And if anything, I don't feel like he's being set up the best to succeed by the coaching staff. Hey, could we get a QB power call? Could we get a designed QB draw with one of the running backs leading for him, like Bredesen leading for Orgy? Every run that he had, if I'm remembering correctly, was a scramble. It was off of a rollout. It was not a designed QB run.
I think he had one or two QB counters. One of them worked, one of them didn't.
How are we not getting that more in a game? Like, the dude is giant. Like, let him wear on these guys and run into some people. But we agree, Orgy is not the issue. To your point about the effort, I feel like you can see it in the execution, right? Those are little things, like executing an onside kick recovery, not allowing a Hail Mary to be completed. I forget the other one that I mentioned. And you feel like you're getting into the second half and they're just kind of sitting on their laurels and they're like, we're Michigan. And you're watching as a fan, you're thinking to yourself, one of the reasons they hired Sherrone as the successor to Harbaugh was to maintain the culture, right? They were like, we've got a really good thing going here with the culture and the vibe of this team in the locker room. Let's try to keep that intact. And you feel like you're losing it a little bit.
I don't think the culture's there at all. I think you're missing. That's the biggest piece missing from the Harbaugh led teams. Like, it looks different on the field. Like, even like being disciplined, like how many stupid penalties have there been this year as compared to last year? And I'm not saying that Sherrone's a bad culture guy. I think you had probably the most coaching turnover out of any Division I Power Four conference this year. And you're the national champions. So you have to replace a lot of different guys. And it was great to keep Sherrone because all of those guys, Will Johnson, Kenneth Grant, the reason that you're able to be competitive and you're at 4-1 were able to stay. It's just a matter of like, how are you going to keep that together? And it seems like Sharone is on that island a little bit. He's, from his verbiage, he's trying to maintain the culture. It just hasn't been that way, if that makes any sort of sense.
Yep, it does. And at the end of the day, they're 4-1, 3-1.
They're 4-1.
Yeah, 4-1. So
they're 4-1 with a top 15 win.
Yes, they're 4-1 with a top 15 win. So you're not upset with the results, but if you're watching the games, you are seeing a different type of team than you did last year, which everyone expected. But I think it's been worse than we expected, given the talent that is on the field and how the execution has gone in the second half. They have a lot of things to work on. And I don't think we need to talk about Minnesota. Do you?
Minnesota, I think, will forever be a 6-win football program. And I think they're okay with it.
I think Minnesota and Maryland are in the same exact boat, and they're both rowing backwards.
Or treading water while simultaneously drinking all of it.
I agree. That's a great way to put it. Let's go to the next one. This is going to be the last one we kind of get a little in the weeds about. Ohio State goes on the road to East Lansing, crushes the Spartans 38-7. This game was one of those games where like it was close until it wasn't. And one of the reasons that it really wasn't was Jeremiah Smith. This kid is a freak of nature. He's too good. He's too good for college football. He should be eligible for the draft this year. He had 5 catches, a touchdown, 83 yards through the air. He also had a rushing touchdown of 19 yards. And he had 2 catches on, I believe it's their last drive before half, that both of them, one-handed snags that he makes it look like he's just grabbing a glass off the top shelf. It looks so easy and graceful for him to do. It's wonderful to watch. Like, the kid is just uber talented, and Ohio State just keeps rolling. Will Howard doing exactly what he needs to do, threw for 244 and 2 touchdowns, only 1 pick. Travion Henderson averaged 9.9 yards a carry. The dude almost averaged a first down by himself. And then Quinson Judkins averaged 4.9. Like, the talent is everywhere. And they're just rolling. Like, earlier in the year, we talked about their slow starts. And you could even argue in this game they got off to a slow start too. Like, first quarter was Ohio State 3-0. And you're like, oh, first quarter, slow start, slow out the gates. And then, boom, halftime was 24-7. And then Ohio or Michigan State didn't score in the second half. So this is just Ohio State being like, okay, yeah, slow first quarter, and then we're going to show you who we are. And I think this is a team that you can count on. Like, I think you can count on this type of effort game in and game out, which is a hard thing to count on when it comes to college football teams. I think Ohio State might be an exception right now.
They are getting the Michigan treatment from last year. Their season doesn't start until their big game comes. The Michigan season didn't start until Penn State. Ohio State season isn't going to start until Oregon. Until they get a team that has the same amount of talent on their roster, this is what they're going to do. They might start off slow, but they are doing exactly what we talked about with the Penn State-Illinois matchup, is we are more talented. We are going to run the most vanilla play calling, or we're just going to say, frick it, Jeremiah Smith up there somewhere. We're just going to chuck him that rock, and then he's going to do something incredible with it. And it's, if you are a fan of that team, you are like, my team is so good. This is incredible. Feel on top of the world, because it is an awesome feeling. And if you are a fan of any other team, you're sitting there being like, how come we can't do that? How come we can't just find some random 12-year-old off the street and he just takes over the world by storm, you know? But this is what Ohio State has built over the past 30 years of football. They can have a down year. They cannot win the national championship, but they're going to find some 5-star from the middle of nowhere. Jeremiah Smith probably isn't from the middle of nowhere. He's probably from some high school football hotbed, but you get what I'm saying. Next man up, reload, retool, all of these things. They could do it on the fly. They did it with freaking a third string quarterback and they won a national championship after two of the guys got hurt.
Absolutely. And to briefly talk about the other side of this game, Michigan State, no one expected them to win this. That them losing this game is not the issue. They are one of the worst teams in the country at turning the ball over. They are tied for 130th in the country with 13 turnovers lost at this point in the season. Ethan and I don't know if you caught this on a couple episodes. I believe this was one that you missed. We had a little bet that I don't think Michigan State's getting to 7 wins this year. They were 3 and I forget what their record was at the time. They had 3 wins, and I told Ethan over under 3.5. He said over, and I took the under on the rest of the way. I don't think you can win a lot of the games that they're going to play with having those kind of turnover problems. Like, so they just lost to Ohio State. Oregon is up next. You're not winning that. Iowa, absolutely going to feast on those turnovers. Michigan, not nearly as good as they're supposed to be or thought they would be, but it's in Ann Arbor. And again, turnover issues with that defense.
You could have Will Johnson kind of baiting him. I could see if they try to throw his way.
You could have Will Johnson with 3 pick sixes in that game.
Oh, okay.
You know what I would do if Will Johnson had 3 pick sixes against Michigan State?
Would you eat dog crap out of a red Solo cup?
Don't make me do that. Don't make me do that. I am not saying yes to that. You're not tricking me into that.
No, I'm not. Or would you do something with a beefy 5-layer burrito?
Did that BYU guy do it?
He the Kansas State guy did it, I'm pretty sure. He said
he did it?
He said his wife wasn't happy.
Of course she wasn't happy. Oh, gosh. Of course she wasn't happy. Hold on. I didn't tell Grace about this one. There was a Kansas State fan, Grace, that – remember the dog poop guy that we told you about? There was a Kansas State fan that said that he would shove a 5-layer beefy burrito. Beefy
5-layer burrito.
A beefy 5-layer burrito. From Taco Bell. From Taco Bell up his
poop shoot.
His poop shoot if they lost a particular game. And they lost said particular game.
No,
and
that's not even the best part of the story.
What's the best part of the story?
They lost to BYU.
Oh, they lost to BYU, Mormons.
And then BYU's football account after the game tweeted out Liv Moss.
That's right. That's right. BYU's Twitter account, their team account, when they tweeted out the final score, tweeted out Liv Moss with the final score graphic. And the guy, apparently, according to Corey, the guy did it. He actually, wasn't he supposed to live stream it?
All I know is that I didn't see it because why would I watch that?
Corey said he didn't see it.
But he tweeted that he bought it and then he stuck the burrito in his freezer. And then he said his wife was not happy that he did it.
Grace said it's giving someone who was looking for an excuse to do that.
Well,
Corey said he stuck it in the freezer and then did it that way.
Yeah, that's.
He wanted to do it.
I think, yeah, he maybe he did want to do it.
You know, I prefer, not prefer, set the record straight. I only want beefy 5-layer burritos one way. And that way is not the way.
It's got to hurt. Like, Taco Bell's always a little iffy coming out. It's got to hurt.
Stop. This is a family-friendly show.
This is a family-friendly show. We're very sorry, everybody. Very sorry, but it's college football news. Look, this is front page stuff. We would be doing you a disservice if we didn't talk about this. Okay, so Ohio State's a freight train. End of story. Okay, end of story. Let's get to the rest of the action. Indiana beat Maryland 42-28. Indiana.
We got to have a serious conversation about them potentially being 11-1.
Indiana being 11-1?
They're 5-0 right now. Okay? And then they play the remaining teams on their schedule that are problematic are Northwestern. They get them at – or no, not Northwestern. Excuse me. Nebraska. They get them at home. They get Michigan at home. And with the way that they're playing, who knows what's going to happen. And then they go to Ohio State. That is it.
Indiana is 5-0 for the first time since 1967, and they have won five straight games by double digits for the first time since 1905-06. This has potential to be the best Indiana team ever.
R.I.P. Michael Penix and the Hoosiers from the COVID year.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. But this Indiana team is legit. And Maryland, what are you? What are you doing here? Why are you here? Anytime they have to play any football team with a pulse, they roll over like dogs.
Kick them out. This is my option. Kick them out. Kick them out of the Big Ten, put them back in the ACC, and then invite Hawaii.
I love that idea. I love that idea. I'd love to go to a Michigan road game at Hawaii.
It'd be incredible.
It'd be absolutely incredible. Nebraska beats Purdue 28-10. Purdue has fired their offensive coordinator, Graham Harrell. Might be a good thing.
Shout out Purdue special teams. They were the conference special teams unit of the week.
I believe they were the special teams unit of the nation, too.
Yes.
According to PFF, I'm pretty sure.
Shout out those guys. Punting wins championships.
That's Big Ten football, baby. USC beats Wisconsin 38-21. USC messed around for a while there, and it looked like Wisconsin was going to win this. And thank the Lord, USC was a late cover in this one. I needed that one to go my way bad. And so far, picking against Wisconsin in the spread?
Easy.
Hasn't done me wrong. Last game of the week was Oregon-UCLA. Oregon 34, UCLA 13. UCLA bad at football.
What are you doing here? This is Maryland of the West is what they're calling UCLA right now. What are you doing? Just stop it. Get some help.
UCLA and Maryland and Minnesota need to all like form a support group, and they really need to hold each other accountable. Or maybe they are. Maybe they're like, dude, you can't be too good because then you'll leave me in the dust. They're just all together in this pile of mid mush.
So we have Maryland of the East, or we have Maryland who's mid of the East. We have Minnesota who's mid of the North, and UCLA who's mid of the West. Who's mid of the South? Is that Mississippi State?
Well, oh no, I think Mississippi State's just bad.
Oh,
I think they're just bad.
Yeah, take that SEC propaganda at the beginning of the show.
Okay, that was the Big Ten week. Now, we'll tell you how we did, unfortunately for me. In the picks in week five, your man, Corey Cercina, was 4-5, and unfortunately, that was the best record this week. Ethan was 3-6, and I was 2-7. We did you guys wrong this week. No one was above 500, but for the year, we're still doing all right. Ethan's leading the pack 39-28. And Corey and I are bringing up the rear. I'm 35-32. Corey's 35-31. He's got one game to make up this week, which I will choose for you, my friend.
Hey, I'm 1-0 for those games.
You are 1-0 for those games. That's true. Before we get into the picks for this week, just want to give everyone an update on the AP poll and where your favorite Big Ten teams are at. Ohio State is at 3. Oregon is at 6. Penn State is at 7. Michigan is at 10. Shockingly, that is not a top 10 team.
What? That's right on the paper. It says so.
It says so, but my eyes deceive me. USC is at 11. Indiana's at 23. Freaking Indiana at 23. Let's go. Illinois still at 24, even with the loss at Happy Valley. And Rutgers is shamefully not ranked.
Cowards. I will say this. We're away from SEC propaganda and Big Ten focus. We have something that's brewing on the horizon here, okay? And what is brewing is the Army-Navy game has the potential to be a ranked matchup at the end of the year with college football playoff implications at stake, which... Can you imagine in the inaugural 12-team playoff that whoever loses the Big Ten championship plays Army?
That would be
hosts
absolutely
Army?
Wild.
Oh, that would be incredible. I would buy the heck out of Army playoff merch. Are you kidding me?
Oh, same.
That's
same.
Alex, that's what I want for Christmas from you is Army playoff merch.
I got you.
Okay.
I got you.
Cool.
I'm looking at the playoff odds too. This is just getting a little bit interesting now with these middling Big Ten teams that we've been talking about. So Ohio State is minus 1,200. Oregon is minus 400. Penn State's minus 200. And then you go searching, you go scrolling. USC is plus 180 still, even with the loss to Michigan. You go scrolling, you're looking. Indiana, plus 600 to make the college football playoff above Michigan.
Wow. Let's get weird.
Let's get weird with it, bro. We love the 12-team playoff for this reason in and of itself. Okay, so we've got picks to get to. We have one game on a Friday. Corey, you're going to give us the spreads, correct? So I'll let you take the lead.
Oh, it's good to be back in the driver's seat, baby. Kicking us off Friday for a Big Ten weekend. Get ready for Michigan State traveling to Oregon, where the spread is minus 24 in favor of Oregon. Alex, do us the honors of kicking this thing off.
I talked about it. Michigan State can't stop turning the ball over, and it feels like Oregon is starting to round into form now. Oregon didn't cover against a really, really bad UCLA team, but there's some familiarity there, right, between the two programs. MSU, not a lot of familiarity here. Although, did they play in the Peyton Thorne era of Michigan State, like early on? Did they play Oregon? Am I misremembering that?
I think they did. And they came close. And then they also played Washington. And Washington beat them both times.
Or maybe I'm thinking about Washington. I think I'm thinking about Washington. Either way, not a whole lot of familiarity here. This is their first conference matchup between the two. Turnover issues, give me Oregon minus 24.
Yeah, there's not much going well for me in the world as far as teams that I hate and me being right about how bad they are. So I'll just double down on my hatred for Michigan State. I've been getting a little soft in my old age. So Michigan State, I hate you. Just for the record. And I hope you lose by 31 points. So Oregon finally covers the spread. Good grief. Good gracious. Okay. Next game. Noon kickoff. I don't know if it's the big, I don't think it's the big noon kickoff, but it might be. UCLA. Oh gosh. Travels to Penn State where the spread is minus 28. Don't think too hard. Just don't. UCLA is a miserable football team. Just take, if you're going to bet this game, just take Penn State and don't think about it. Okay.
Okay. I'm going to listen to you. I'm not going to think, and I'm also going to take Penn State.
There we go. It's super easy. Now here we go. A game that most people thought was going to be interesting early on in the year, but now it's interesting for completely different reasons. How bad do these teams suck? Purdue travels to Wisconsin, where Wisconsin is minus 14. Alex, you take the lead.
I have a rule. I'm never picking Wisconsin to cover a spread. So I'm picking Purdue. I also think a breath of fresh air at OC. Like sometimes you see these things really kick a team into, not into high gear, but you're like, oh, okay, the coaching staff saw something that wasn't being done. They let this guy go, and now they can really implement something that they think can work really well. So I think breath of fresh air with the new OC, Purdue plus 14 on the road.
This feels like one of those games where something kind of has to give. Is Wisconsin going to be terrible forever? And is Purdue going to be as miserable as they've been for the entirety of the year? This seems like a really big spread for teams that I think are relatively close to each other. It'll come down to whether or not Wisconsin can run the ball effectively, but for whatever reason, they don't want to do that. I'll take Purdue. I don't feel great about it, but minus 14 seems like a lot.
A quick thing about Wisconsin too, because we talked about this last year when Braylon Allen was there, right? And it was like, why is Braylon Allen not getting the ball? Like, dude's a freak. And you see him now, like He's kind of a beast. He's a little bit electric for the Jets in the NFL. A few days ago, Braylon Allen tweeted while the Wisconsin-USC game was going on. He tweeted, "I'm going to hold my tongue for now, but y'all going to see me on a podcast one day explaining exactly what was going on my last season there."
I think we called it too. We were sitting here until we were blue in the face. Why is Wisconsin not giving Braylon Allen the ball?
He was far and away their most gifted player on offense. And just the refusal to give him the touches he deserved was asinine. So a little tidbit for you on the drama that might have been happening this year or last year, but nevertheless, we're both picking Purdue.
Oh, boy. All right. Next game at 3:30. Iowa travels to Ohio State, maybe the best defense that Ohio State has faced yet, but they have a quadriplegic at quarterback in Cade McNamara. The spread is -20.5. Alex Orji has a better QBR than Cade McNamara this year, and Ethan and I are Cade McNamara stands, but yeah, I could easily see Ohio State winning this game by 21 or more, so I'll just say Ohio State and be done with it.
I'm torn here, because as bad as Cade McNamara is, that's how great Caleb Johnson is at running back. Like, that dude's a stud, an absolute stud. Do I think Iowa's defense can keep this close enough? You know what? I'm going to do a quick – hold on. I'm doing some research on the fly here. What's Ohio State's rush?
Not allowed. Nope. Can't do it.
I'm doing it right now. You can't stop me.
Not allowed.
Oh, God. Ohio State has the third best rush defense in the entire country this year.
Yeah, and they're going to stack the box.
Oh, geez.
Does not
am I going to
well
pick
for Michigan?
Oh, you know what? I thought I'd picked all favorites to this point. Purdue was an underdog. So, okay, I feel halfway decent picking a favorite here. Ohio State at home -20.5. Okay, I'll take Ohio State.
Okay.
We have picked the same exact teams these first four games.
Yeah,
these are all potential big banter locks.
Yeah, we'll frick you.
we're both the bottom of the barrel in the picks too, so this is not a good sign.
No, not
Ethan
a good
should
sign.
Ethan should fade us, absolutely. Yeah. Maybe the listeners should too.
Easy. Your 23rd ranked Indiana Hoosiers travel to everyone's favorite soccer stadium in the Big Ten, Northwestern, where the spread is -14 in favor of Indiana. I went first last time, so you are going to go first, Alex.
I'm just riding this wave. I think IU just is loving playing football right now. They're having fun doing it. And Northwestern's not a good team. I don't care that this is at home. They lost a game to Duke at home. Then they went on the road and didn't cover against Washington. I think Indiana's just legit and they're having fun. Give me Indiana.
Man, I just like – I don't want to pick Indiana again, but I don't think I've picked an Indiana game right this entire year. Ugh. What happened to Northwestern?
I think last year I kind of saw this coming. They were a Cinderella story last year. Like, they were a ragtag Duke group of guys that only had each other. Like, and now this year you're actually expected to like form a culture and build something and be legit, and like we're being reminded that they're still Northwestern.
All right. Fine. Give me Indiana.
Great. Stupid. I hate being this. Five games in a row, we're freaking picking the same teams. One, two, three, four. Yeah, five.
That's fine, because we're going to pick Rutgers traveling to Nebraska next at a 4 o'clock kick, where Nebraska is 6.5, and I'm going to go first. Actually, now thinking about it, I was much more confident to say Rutgers covering this spread and then outright winning. But this is, if you're Rutgers, this is a game you got to win if you want to actually make some noise in the Big Ten. I'm riding Rutgers. I've been riding Rutgers all year, so I'm going to do it.
Nebraska's -6.5.
Yeah.
That is, oh God, I thought Rutgers was going to potentially be favored, or this was going to be like 3 or less. Oh God. Okay, hold on. Research.
Oh my
God. Rushing this offense.
America, this is what Alex is gonna do. He's gonna research and then he's gonna pick the same thing as me.
Oh, rushing offense. Why have I not seen the Nebraska logo yet? Oh God. Okay, Nebraska's the 87th ranked rushing offense in the country. Oh, that's not you know what? Screw it. Nebraska doesn't I say they don't beat themselves, and they kind of beat themselves against Illinois at the end of the game.
They did do it. Come on, you know what you want to do.
You know what? No, the magic will not last forever with Rutgers. Give me Nebraska.
But they're chopping, and they ain't stopping. All right, West Coast kick. Finally, USC gets to play in a cold weather game, which is cool. Too bad it's against Minnesota. USC travels to Minnesota for a 7:30 kick, where the weather is currently going to be, or is 71 degrees is what it's projected as. So, wow.
USC's going to be pulling up with parkas getting off the bus.
Yeah, probably. The spread is USC -8. Alex, what say you?
USC, they're a far superior team in every facet of the game of football, including coaching. Give me USC.
Yeah, I think USC won't really play with their food with Minnesota. Yeah, I just don't see it. I don't see them being able to keep up with the talent that USC has, especially on the air raid offense. And Miller Moss, he slings it.
He's nasty with it.
Even when it doesn't look like he's slinging it, he's slinging it. Okay. Your Big Ten Saturday night, your 2023 national championship rematch. Michigan travels to Washington, where we talked about it earlier in the show. Michigan opened as a 1-point favorite, but now the line has gone in the completely opposite direction, where Washington is -2.5. You went first last time. I will go first, and I am unfortunately a fan at heart, and I've convinced myself from the beginning of the week to now that Michigan will somehow figure out a way to win this game. We said USC was the litmus test, and then we got the game that we got against Minnesota. This really is the litmus test. If Michigan goes on the road and loses this game, you are going to find out very quickly what this team is going to be for the rest of the year. I think Michigan wins. Therefore, they cover. I think Orji plays better. Continued minimal improvements. And I think the rushing attack will just be too much.
I'm going with Michigan to cover and win as well. I think something people probably aren't paying attention to. Michigan last week was out without their best pass rusher, without their best corner in Will Johnson, who's maybe the best corner in the country, and without their best wide receiver in Samaj Morgan. So all three of those guys are rumored to be back. I think it's going to make a big difference. And I think this team's just going to play better. I think they recognize that that wasn't Michigan football. They're going to come out and be more themselves this game. So I'll take Michigan +2.5 as well. Now we've got one game for Corey.
Yeah,
because he's got a game to make up.
Yeah, because you can't pick this game with me. So this is my game.
It's your game.
Yeah, idiot.
You'll own your own L.
No, I'm 1-0. I got 100 winning percentage right now.
All right, let's see. Missouri traveling to Texas A&M. What would you guess the spread is?
Oh gosh, Missouri's not been playing well. 2.5 A&M.
It is 2 A&M.
We need to call the number. We need to call the number. We haven't even done anything. Oh gosh. Oh. Ew.
I mean, based off of your estimation, you should take Missouri.
Yeah, probably. Probably should take Missouri. You know what? Maybe I'll. Yeah. 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 I'll take Missouri.
Sounds like some waffling.
No, I'm not. Missouri. Okay. Missouri's got to figure out a way to be the team that everybody was saying they were going to be. And they've had their two rough weeks. So that tells you one of two things. That is the sign of what is to come, or that's getting everything out of the way. And I don't know if it's a third time's the charm type thing, but how good is A&M really?
How good are they? We will see.
We'll see. Go Tigers. All right. I'm in a Tigers mood, Alex, in case you haven't felt the chill in the air of October baseball for the first time since I was a wee lad, 17 years old.
Well, now that we started talking baseball, it is time to end the episode. Thank you,
you're
everybody.
You're a bum. You're a bum.
Hey, I'm rooting for the Tigers.
Yeah, you better be.
I am rooting for the Tigers. I'm just not a baseball guy. Yeah, you know that.
You suck.
But Tigers. Let's go Tigers.
Go Tigers.
Go Tigers. Hey, everybody, thank you for listening. We will be back next week. Have a great game day.
Deuces.